Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana.
All right, how you doing? Come on in. Sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds and souls, the hearts and lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am back to podcasting. I am a podcaster. I'm also a member of SAG. You didn't know that since we've last talked to each other, I am a SAG member. I am in the Screen Actors Guild. That means I am also a DVD watcher, but I used to be a person who didn't have a DVD player because I just had computers and I got rid of the DVD players a long time ago. Pretty shitty for a guy who's selling DVDs, but that's the facts. But I went out and I bought myself a DVD USB attachment that goes to my computer, so now I can watch all the free DVDs that are supposed to be in movie theaters now, but I get to watch them at home because I am a member of SAG. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler. And yes, I am sitting here live in my studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before I go any further, this is a fan support and listener supported podcast supported by people just like you. I give it to you some Thursdays, ColtCabana.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts from. A couple great ways that you could support: rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, let them know. I used to say Facebook, maybe Twitter, maybe Instagram, but you better believe now I'm saying make a TikTok about it. I am on TikTok at Colt Cabana. It's not that good yet. I don't have many followers, but I watch a lot of TikToks and it has taken over my life. I am one of you, basically. I want you to know I'm part of the youth. I'm still in my 30s, not for much longer, but I am basically a 30s guy trying to be a 20s guy, trying to understand what the teenagers want. I don't know, but I do like TikTok. Other ways to support: Patreon. The Patreon is where you can listen to these shows ad-free. It's also where you see I have the video talk with Will Ospreay, and you can listen to the next 5 talks. They're already posted on Patreon. It's only $5 a month. The archives are $4 a month. Or if you're generous, you can give me more. Or if you're not generous, you can give me less. And the main way: cultmerch.com, digitalcult.com, t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs, digital downloads, premium podcasts, much, much more. Too much talking in the beginning, but I'm giddy. Can you tell? I'm giddy. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to bring back the podcast. Blue Chew has sponsored this run of podcasts. We won't get to their ad yet, but I got to give them a little love. And you should give them some love, too. They're giving you love in your pants. All right, the guest this week, Will Ospreay. I forgot what I usually do. Do I talk about life before first, or do I talk about the guest first? We'll talk about Will. Will's on the show. This was right before Wrestle Kingdom. Oh, I do stuff for New Japan now. I don't know if you know that. There's so much to talk about. Last time I was podcasting consistently, having these guests on, I was part of DDT. Before that, Noah. Before that, 01. Now, New Japan. This week specifically, I will be wrestling with my new tag team partner, Yano, in the New Japan USA shows. But it all leads to Will and I being in Japan together. Will lives in Japan now, which is a crazy thing. Also something a lot of these guys are starting to do. I never had the balls to do it. I went to England a little bit, but I'm not going to buy a residence in Japan. These wrestlers, they love New Japan so much. They're living in Japan full time. I was going to say they're living in New Japan full time, not to be confused with Old Japan. They are living there full time, and they are what a wrestler is. I've always loved the idea of Japan. I've always said Japan is where you go when America won't show you any love and you know you're good. But for some reason, America just won't give you the love. I've had it before. Many others have had it before. I guess I won't say that America's not giving Will Ospreay the love, but I bet if WWE was like, here's $8 million, he'd be like, well, Japan, I got to go. But I'm just speaking for him. I don't know. Maybe that's not the case. 8 million is a lot. I mean, I understand if they're like 1 million, he's like, no, I love New Japan. But $8 million, I feel you got to do it, right? So proving my point, no love in America, but so much love in Japan. It's where the wrestlers head over to. And that is what's happening right now. Will is in a complete up climb of his career. He's always been in an up climb of his career, which is the idea. It's what you do. You climb up, you consistently get better, you learn, you grow. And we'll talk all about that as we sit in the Tokyo Dome Hotel and chat at it. That chat will come up in a little bit. For me personally, what am I doing? I'm wrestling. I kissed a man's penis. That seemed to be frowned upon by many in the wrestling community. I'm going to say zero when it comes to my fans. Here's what I'll say about this. Also, I don't have a script. I wasn't going off it. I was just thinking of stuff that I've done. Because I did wrestle at Wrestlepalooza for First Wrestling. I am the Jewish champion. First Wrestling has been doing shows at a synagogue, thanks to Rabbi Fine. I did wrestle for Lucha Libre and Laughs, and on and on. I'm keeping a consistent schedule like I always have. But at Bar Wrestling, it was midnight, and I wanted to kiss somebody, and my tag team partner that night was Joey Ryan. But let's be honest, the star of that show is his wiener, and I thought it would be cute to kiss the star of the show at midnight. A lot of people straight up homophobic, and they're trying to hide around it that they're not, but just straight up homophobic, because if that's something that weirds you out or gets you mad, I'm going to say, why is it? And you're going to defend yourself. Here's what people are defending themselves against, besides saying I have homophobia, is I don't want that in my wrestling. And yes, I'm using that voice. I'll do it again. I don't want that in my wrestling. I just like kicking and punching, and that's the wrestling that I like. I don't want that. Now he's turned weird Australian. I don't know. I'm assuming it's a guy also. I didn't get a lot of flack from the ladies or other genders. But fine. You don't want that in your wrestling. I have always said that I'm a very versatile wrestler. I'll wrestle a children's style in front of children. I'll wrestle a Japanese strong style, especially, let's say, in Noah. I'll wrestle lucha style when I do lucha vavoom. And bar wrestling is made for that crowd, an adult crowd. It's bar wrestling, 18 and up. You might not want that at your wrestling, but I know my audience, and that night in that VFW hall on New Year's Eve, that is exactly the wrestling that that crowd wants. I'm sorry somebody filmed it and put it on the internet, but I'm wrestling for my audience on that night, and that's what they want, and that's what they got. Great way to ring in 2020, and you can't get me upset. All right, we got a new batch of podcasts coming up. This is the very first one. Back to the old formula. I'm not, for legal purposes, I'm not doing Song of the Week anymore. I don't even know if that is. Listen, you know what I've been through. I'm just not chancing anything, which is weird when I'm going to put up what Blue Chew will be sponsoring. But Blue Chew will be sponsoring a mini talk before the actual talk. All right, the mini talk this week is from a very famous YouTube personality who loves doing shoot interviews on YouTube. He's Canadian, he's a wrestler, and he's talked to all of the greats. And now, on The Art of Wrestling, before Will Ospreay, he's going to talk to me.
Normally, I am the interviewer.
Now, Hannibal, you talked some crap about me because you don't like the way that I interacted with Joey Ryan.
Yeah, I don't like pee-pee kissing.
There's
my impression of you.
Thank you.
But it's a peepee, not a microphone.
Yeah. So this is a little awkward exchange between both of us.
I'm.
You had Kevin Sullivan, like you goaded him into talking shit about me.
So, but you're friends with the other Kevin.
I'm friends with a lot of Kevins.
Well, one Kevin in particular.
You sound kind of like, look at your, is it nothing. Kevin Owens?
Ding dong, ding, ding, ding. Not ding dong, ding ding. Like if you get like a game show, you get it right.
What's wrong with Kevin Steen?
T-shirt.
Excuse me?
Wears a T-shirt. I was talking to old guys. We don't like that T-shirt talk.
So
we have T-shirt talk at. We got dinner early. You guys, what do you guys think of a wrestler wearing a T-shirt? And they'll go, oh, no way. So I have good. I wouldn't even think of asking what they thought if a wrestler kissed another wrestler's pee-pee.
Well, you did. You asked Kevin Sullivan about it.
Well, Kevin, he's into the he's the devil and stuff like that. He can handle it, but I wouldn't want to ask some of the old sweet old guys.
And then you encouraged a fight between Lanny Poffo and Honky Tonk Man, which I kind of found a little disturbing, I'll be honest.
Hey, got to make a buck sometimes, you know.
Jesus, is that well? That's what I feel when I kiss a man on his wiener. So you can't relate to me? What's wrong?
I don't relate.
Hannibal.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess have you said everything?
You want to start the shoot interview or what? How did you get into wrestling?
You're interviewing me now?
Yeah. Nah, I'll use this feed too. I can borrow it.
Please don't.
Can you go behind that background? It's nicer for the YouTube.
Please don't.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you get into wrestling?
Stop. This is not something I'm really interested
in. Where was your first match?
Okay, we've all seen you on YouTube ask these questions.
What was that territory like back then? A lot of people say it was very hard hitting. Is that true?
So now this is true that you don't even listen to the answers.
Who was booking back then?
You just say whatever you want to say.
I've heard people say they could make upwards of $2,000 a week in that territory.
And that's why
correct?
I feel my podcasts are a little more important is because
he ever stiff with you in the ring?
Having a real conversation, not just asking these questions that are
now that drew money. A lot of these new guys can't draw any money. They're all little.
Written
you know,
down in the same
little
basic
tiny
question.
Guys.
I guess I do kind of talk about.
I had a contract with WWE,
people
but
growing
it didn't
up,
work out.
And I want to know the background of people's families and how they got into wrestling.
Why do you think Eric Bischoff was afraid to hire you?
Those are the similarities
do you think,
of yeah. my questions. But I'm always making sure I'm interacting. And
I heard a rumor you were going
to
be WWF champion, Hogan nixed it. Is that true?
A back and forth conversation.
What was the original idea for you and your brother when you were going to the WWF at
just
the time?
Doesn't seem to be a back and forth conversation, which is what I like, my style.
Did you prefer New York or Atlanta?
And maybe that's why I haven't put the show on YouTube.
And Philadelphia, I would have loved to
although
have been
although it
there.
Is now on Patreon.
Paul Heyman once told me, Hannibal, you would have been a natural here in Philadelphia.
I guess if you do want to see the video, and, I am going into your territory.
I mean, what? Canada?
No, YouTube.
Oh, I'm going to take down those Wrestle Talk, those British guys. I read the Meltzer stuff, not them.
All right, for legal purposes, that was not Hannibal. That was one of the great characters on Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling. It's a podcast. It's one of my favorite podcasts. Dare I call it my sister or brother podcast? That was the great Marty DeRosa doing one of the many characters he does every single week with his comedy partner, Sarah Shockey. Find it wherever you find podcasts. All right, let's get into the real talk with Will Ospreay.
Oh, this is going to be listened to in 2020.
Oh, this is going to be New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as
and
well.
And happy birthday also.
Happy birthday?
I don't know. I'm assuming your birthday is from now until then.
Okay. Oh, it probably is.
When is your birthday?
May 7th.
If you were to guess my birthday.
Are you May 7th as well?
May 6th.
Oh, same as my dad. My dad's born on the 6th.
Were you his birthday present?
I'm going to guess it was like a shock. It was probably just like he was out celebrating with a couple of beers with his mates. And then all of a sudden my mom called him just going, I'm giving birth.
You don't think that your dad was with your mom on the day before that you were born?
Nah, absolutely not. Nah, absolutely not. I don't think so anyway.
Is that real or not?
I'm going to have to ask him. I'm just going to have to be like, what was you doing?
You think he was out on, is he a typical
British
man?
Nah, my dad's just cool. My dad's just, I don't know, he's just a Don, isn't he?
I don't know what that means. Just, a Don?
Yeah, Don.
First of all, if anyone was to say that, I would think he was an Italian member of a mafia.
Okay, cool. No.
What is the British lingo of Don?
I don't know. Just a cool dude. Just a gangster. Just
a
my
chav?
Dad's cool. No, my dad's not. I'm a chav, if anything.
Are you?
Like, yeah, I don't know. I really don't know.
Why don't you explain for everyone what a chav is?
Oh, it's just like, I don't know. It must be like the epitome to like white trash for you guys. I don't know. Chav is just like someone who's like usual outfits are like track suits and just like baggy pants and like, just tall. Well,
now that MJF, see, I think of Chaz, I think of Burberry. And MJF wears those.
Really?
Burberry
I would have said
scarf.
He was a very smartly dressed man.
Really?
Yeah, I would have said he's very smartly dressed.
I just think of Greg Burridge, who used to wear.
Yes, exactly. Greg's a chav. Right. Like, kind of. Yeah, Greg's a chav.
And he would wear all Burberry stuff.
Would he? I've never seen him in Burberry ever.
That was the gimmick, I thought, for wrestling.
He was always in Adidas and Nike. Okay. And they're like typical chav wear, I think, anyway.
Are you from Essex?
Yes.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh, I just guessed that.
Yeah. Well, it's the accent, isn't it?
No, I mean, well, when I think of Chavs, I think of Essex. Yeah, I think exactly. That's because he sung it in a song.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm so Parker. Yeah. You are a slag. Slag.
You are a slag.
Yeah, slag.
We're just doing all the British lingo.
Yeah. You guys sung that. I actually remembered singing that word for word, like, because me and my mates would watch 1PW.
Now, did you think that that was our song together?
I thought Greg probably suggested this would be funny and you just went along with it.
Yeah, I mean, that was Greg's song for like 2 years before we started teaming together.
But I thought it was the Team Shag song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the great part about it, because it was such a great song.
Yeah, it was great.
And I don't know if you, do you know people, who do you know who've sang their own songs? What would be the number one wrestler?
Shaw Samuels, I know that one, because he did like, there was Park Life, but instead it was Shaw's Life or something.
Is that right?
Like that.
And he sang his own song.
Yeah, he sung his own song.
See, I think of, and a shout out to our friend Rocky Romero, I think that Roppongi jam is pretty.
Dude, I actually said this to him. I was like, it's kind of cool because obviously like I do love hip hop and like I love singing and stuff like that. And able to download his song on the Apple Music. And like normally you're just like, oh, it's my mate singing, I'll give him like a like a retweet. But I genuinely like his album. I really like it.
Well, you know who is featured?
Yes, you are.
Yes, thank you.
The wise guru of t-shirt selling.
I think it's cooler when like my friend Kid Russell, who's the singer, he's saying that's what my song is, Boom Boom Cool.
Yeah,
right. He's my buddy from high school, or from life, you know, but you know, high school and so on. And whenever I get to do bigger shows, I think it's like, how cool is it that this guy's music is playing at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, whatever. Yeah.
So I think of that when I went and watched, I think 2 years ago, I was with DDT and we were wrestling in Japan. And then I watched, it was one where you did maybe it was last year where you did the moonsault off of the Tokyo Dome show.
Oh, yeah. Tokyo Dome. Yeah.
Was that last year?
Yes, that was. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay.
This year was me and Ibushi. Last year was the four way. Yeah, it was.
Okay. And I'm just like, Rocky's coming out with, to like that music's being played in front of 50,000 people.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, I thought that was cool as well. Like, I felt the same where Madison Square Garden, because like this guy just wrote a song about me. It's just like at one point the song goes, Osprey, Osprey. I was just like, cool. It literally feels like I'm my own rock star, like Kevin from It Lives, It Breathes, but now he's a part of Damnation, which is great album, great artist.
That's the guy who made your song?
Yeah, the guys that made my song, Kevin, is just amazing voice. And we had problems with it a little while ago because there's something between them and the label. I never understood, because in my mind, the guy that sung it and the guy that produced it has given us permission for it. But there was something with the label. But they've managed to sort it out, so we got it back. I just didn't want anyone else singing my theme song. Just, he's got such a unique voice. I think he's just one of the best singers I've ever seen.
Also, I would love the idea of a band named Kevin. I know it's probably...
Oh, no, no, it's Damnation.
If I was to start a band, cool. I think I'd call my band Kevin.
I'd call it Steve.
Frank.
Yeah. Kevin and Steve.
Yeah.
Kevin and Steve.
You were a hip-hop head, but you didn't want a hip-hop music.
No, I just like all music. I like my boy bands. I like my rap music. I love hip-hop. Love ABBA. Oh, God, I love ABBA.
I went karaoke-ing the other night.
Karaoke?
You were nowhere to be found.
I'm not on this tour.
Well,
got some time off for once. For this year, I finally got some time off.
Right. Well, you've been missed. Okay. So you said that you, your parents, you're from Essex.
Yep.
What kind of, your dad's cool.
My dad's so cool.
Your mom's cool.
Mom's lovely. My mom is the best.
What was growing up in Essex like?
Just cool. Just, usually I've had like an amazing childhood. Just,
okay.
Mom and dad looked after me. But we were always known as like the neighbors from hell. Just because...
Who's we?
My family.
Okay. Just you?
No, my family.
Like,
my dad was cool because he's just like... My dad's just my
Is it
dad.
Just you three growing up, or do you have
Yeah, yeah. Well, us three, but... So, story is my mum owns a drama group, like amateur productions, like pantomime. She does it at the Queen's Theatre and done the West End twice and both times sold out. Yeah. My mum is awesome. My mum's so cool. She writes shows, produces them, directs them.
Sings? Everything.
She used to, like, I was on stage in her belly, like, singing.
So you grew up going to these shows?
Yes, and there's probably a lot of about that you could probably... That's why you like the way you are, like...
Okay, yeah.
But, yeah, my mum would just produce all these shows and just...
Were you a theater kid?
Yeah, of course, yeah, I was a theater kid. I used to be able to sing. Like, I mean, I can't sing, but I can hold a note. But I was more of a dancer. Like, my mum would bring in dancers to our drama group to like teach us how to do stuff. And then one day, like, I just picked up really easy. I was a very good ballroom dancer.
You know how you see pictures of like all these like young wrestlers, like, and then their kids like hang out with Andre the Giant or Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
And like as a fan, I'm just like, oh man, I'd kill to, why didn't I get to be able to hang out with Paul Orndorff or whatever? Yeah. Was that you with like the stars of the London theater?
No, absolutely not. Like I couldn't give a toss who they were. I just generally just
like, but I'm saying, were they stars?
No, of course they weren't stars.
They weren't.
It was literally just like the kids that like, no one was paid to be in the group. My mum, it was like a amateur drama group, and people of the community of like where I'm from, Raynham, would come do these shows, and there'd be like pantomimes, like Cinderella, like Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh, it wasn't larger than like you said. They did the West End,
but they did, yeah. They did the West End twice. My mum,
which in my head is that's like Broadway.
Yes, it is. But like, my mum, because we would do shows at the Queen's Theatre, which is a local theater, which is like a 500 seater.
Sounded so big.
No, but
in my head, it was 50,000 people.
No, it's not 50,000, but like my mum would do like one night at the Queen's Theatre, 1 year sellout. Next time she'd do two shows, sellout. So she'd be doing like four nights in a row at the Queen's Theatre, sellout, different crowds, different people all the time. So when one day my mum was just like, I'm just going to do the West End. I'm just going to give it a go. She hired out the London Palladium, which is like 2,000 seater, and like sold it out, doing her own show, like her own show that she produced. And then she did another one at the Savoy Theatre in 2013, maybe 2012.
Oh, so you were around for this stuff?
Yeah, I was around.
Did you help? Did you do anything?
I was just more or less a dancer. My mum would direct me, do whatever I need. I would dance. I would sing if I need to, but I'm not really that much of a singer. Like I can hold a note, but if you ask me to like go any higher than what I can do, then like it just sounds awful.
All right, what did your dad do?
My dad was an electrician.
Okay.
Yeah, my dad was just, but like he was a very good handyman, so.
Did you pick up that stuff?
Yeah, well, like, to be fair, I tell this story a while ago, but I would go to work with my dad because, like, I didn't graduate in anything, and, like, I didn't get any of the grades I wanted, maybe, like, one B and a C, and everything else I failed. So I had to go to work with my dad.
Hold on, you didn't graduate high school?
No. Oh, no, I mean, I did, but, like, I didn't get the grades I wanted to go to college.
Okay.
Like, I was never given the grades or anything along those lines because I just didn't
You were
attention.
So quick to say, no, I did not graduate high school, though.
Yeah, but like I'm a dumbass.
So you're saying after high school, you went to work with your dad?
Yeah, like, I mean, at first it was with my uncle doing masticing, which is like the rubber seals around your bathrooms and windows. I would do that, and then I'd work with my dad doing the electrician stuff afterwards because that's got a little bit boring and repetitive for me. So doing that with my dad, and I needed my weekends to obviously do the independence. But like, you know, I've never gone to an electrician course or anything like that. My dad would have shown me how to do it and then I would do it. But I have blown up so many people's kitchens. It is unreal. Like, and instead of like being like, put my hands up, oh, sorry, that was my fault, I'd just run off. I'd just be like, no, see you later. Leave people without a kitchen.
Dad lost a lot of jobs because of it.
No, my dad come in and fix it. But I was just like, look, I don't know what I did. I just put up a kitchen.
Ugh, I did construction for my friend in high school.
How was that?
And for some reason, construction meant sweeping up houses and mowing lawns. So I mowed.
It's not construction.
But it was sold to me as construction.
It's not.
But I like mowed the guy's lawn, and then I broke his lawnmower, and then I ran away and never came back to
yeah,
work.
That's yeah. what you just do. That is the man thing to do.
So
break something, walk away, and then come back the next day and go, who's done that?
Well,
I put my foot through so many ceilings and just walk on. Go on.
You would know how to fix it or you don't?
No, of course not. That's
but
why
you've
I'd
been
go on.
You've been learned. You've
no,
been trained.
No, doesn't mean it goes in one ear out the other.
Did your dad make your backyard wrestling rings?
Yeah, so my mom and dad knew a welder. They'd help make
They knew a welder.
Yeah, so then like they
of course
had, like,
they
a
do
rough
for stage
idea.
Stuff.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But like my dad, I guess, would like have a rough idea how it was, and they'd think, oh, it must be a spring underneath. So they put like a car spring underneath the ring.
What's that?
Weld it like, you know, like a car hydraulic spring. Like,
what would you call it? A cask?
Car.
Okay.
Car. But I'm sorry, I'm so English. But I'm so Essex. That's not even English. But then that broke, so you had to get like, it was like a monster truck spring like underneath the ring. So it was so bouncy. We would hit this ring and fly off. I've owned three wrestling rings in my life.
All homemade?
Or one bought? Homemade and then two bought.
What'd you do with the homemade one after you finished
homemade
it?
One, because... So it wasn't like your average wrestling ring. So the average wrestling rings is like bars, right? This was like four posts and then two giant welded together pieces that you needed for four blokes to like lift it up and then screw it into place.
Because you're just guessing. You don't know the schematics.
Yeah, we don't know. Right. We don't know. We're just a bunch of kids backyard wrestling.
So, I mean, there's some money put into that. So once you're like, oh, wait, we want to buy a real ring.
So we got like.
You just scrapped the other
no,
one?
No, we set up a youth group. So like we set up a youth group and we were just like saying basically we wanted to keep kids off street. So we'd teach them how to wrestle and stuff like that. And then.
At what age was this?
14. Like generally, like we were. It was just like we wanted to like do like a community wrestling class. So I was able to like get some youth funding and just like.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not even joking. Lady gave us $2,000. We put up a wrestling ring and we would teach kids to come and wrestle. We didn't know how to wrestle.
Of course.
But like, I mean, like I knew like, because we went to like a school called Dropkicks and they taught us like the basics, like how to bump, how to chain wrestle. But then like they would never teach us anything above that because like we're kids.
Yeah.
So we was like heavily into backyard wrestling. And when this guy was like, yeah, if you want to teach kids to keep them off the street and teach them how to wrestle and stuff like that. Yeah, we'll help you out. We'll give you $2,000, the Bosch. And then we got a new ring. Dude, we had such a cool
unreal. Cool right, well, where was the first fascination with wrestling? Was it right away?
Yeah, as soon as my dad showed me with it. I remember,
did your dad like wrestling?
Yeah, my dad loved it. I love Mr. Perfect. Like, I think
did
was,
your dad's dad like wrestling?
No. My dad's adopted. So like, he doesn't know who his real dad is. He actually found out his surname like, a few years ago, and he looked at it, ripped it up, put it in the bin.
Well, I mean, growing up in his house.
Like, he was adopted, so like, I don't really, I Did can he, remember like bits, but like not really much of like.
But my, he just started watching wrestling then? And then passed it on to you?
Do you know what? I don't know how it came about. Like, if I had to ask, he probably watched like the WOS, World of Sport era, maybe like every now and again, because that's. My granddad would actually be like, yeah, I remember Big Daddy, but that was about it.
That's what all British people
say. Yeah, that's what they all say, right? But yeah, my dad had this VH tape of like the Legion of Doom were on the cover. And that was all I remember of it. And then it was like Mr. Perfect versus Texas Tornado. Okay. So that was like one of the first like, so we were channel hopping first and we saw Triple H in a cast beat The Rock up in a cage. Like, I can't remember what the story was, but my dad was like, oh, yeah, I've actually, like, I go down to the boot sale all the time. Like, it's loads of guys with their cars and they would just sell stuff. He's like, yeah, this guy sells wrestling videos all the time. I was like, can you get me some? Like, I'd love this. Because it was on like Fridays or Mondays. Yeah.
See,
like
in my head, your first wrestling match, like, you ever saw was, like, Chris Sabin and versus Alex Shelley or something.
After the fascination, yeah, but, like.
So you do have that, early days of that generation.
Oh, well, yeah. But like, so the first thing I ever saw was that Triple H and Rock. Then my dad would take me to the past and be like, Mr. Perfect versus Texas Tornado. Mm-hmm. Then after getting into WWE, like finding out about the invasion angle, like, oh, there's a WCW. So I'd watch the WCW Cruiserweights. That's where my fascination lied with like Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio doing it. But then when they did the invasion angle and after that, I just fell out of love with wrestling because there was just nothing else. There was no competition. There was nothing. And then my mate introduced me to TNA, which was the wrestling channel, which is actually where I first saw you with Ring of Honor. Because there was always those cool introduction videos.
I had a 30-second commercial on.
Yeah.
It was like, and the music went.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Oh my God, that is it.
Did I bring you back there?
Yeah, you actually did. The first one I saw was the Austin Aries one because I think his song was like, reach out and touch. It was like. Doing all these cool 450s and then your music came. No, it was like you, then Jack Evans, mm-hmm. and then it was your one. Yeah. And that's when I first saw you because the 1PW shows would come on the wrestling channel as well. But it was when AJ Styles did the Springboard Shooting Star Press, I was like, I want to be a wrestler, mum.
On what? On a Ring of Honor show or the British show he did? Or TNA?
TNA. It was him, Daniels, and Joe.
Gotcha.
Because it was on the wrestling channel.
Now, were you a flippy kid? Or you attributed like, to dance?
I was a dancer, but like my mum had obviously like a trampoline in my back garden and watching the WCW Cruiserweights, so I was able to just do the flips. And near my trampoline was like a swimming pool. And on the swimming pool, there's a ledge that went around it, like decking. So I'd just always butt my trampoline up to the ledge and just do shooting star presses off a ledge. So I was always able to do it.
Like, why didn't you look at The Rock or Triple H and be like, I want to be a wrestler?
I thought they were cool, but I was always a fan of like the ability to be like a Power Ranger.
Something
like Spider-Man, because Spider-Man was a huge influence as a kid.
So you thought you could be more Spider-Man?
I generally think I am Spider-Man when I was a kid.
Okay.
Like, I was climbing up walls. Like, there's a story actually in my school that my mum hates. It's just like me climbing up on like a goal post, like a soccer ball post, like climbing up on it and moonsaulting off, landing on my feet. I got on top of my school's assembly hall roof, like once, just like climbed up on everything and was like climbing on the side of buildings. I was up like a 5-story building just on top of the roof.
Now, do you do this inspired by wrestling or inspired by
just being a dumbass? I think just trying to impress my mates.
Okay. Because me and my friends would kind of do the same thing off the football posts onto like crash pads. But in my head, I was always like, I'm New Jack, or I'm like super crazy moonsaulting off of it or whatever.
I mean, probably when I was young, I was probably thinking to myself, oh, I'm like, I don't know, who's the cruiserweights? Paul London. Paul London was I'm Paul London doing moonsaults. But I think it was after that era, like, because I would watch it, but not religiously. I think it was when I was like 15 and someone showed me Dragon Gate and I was just in awe of it.
So let's go back to, you get funding for this and you make this.
Yes.
You make this ring.
Yeah. Oh, no, we bought a ring. So, like, we bought a ring, and we actually did shows as well. So, we would put shows on.
But is that after you saw Dragon Gate and AJ Styles?
After I saw AJ Styles, but, like, so we watched AJ. I'm trying to remember. Cause when we were backyard wrestling, there were things called, like, feds. So, there was, like, we had the territory in Raynham, which is my one. And this we had the territory in Luton, which was different wrestlers. And
is
like,
this all based off the internet? Are you finding each other off the internet?
Yeah, we had like a forum.
Okay.
We generally like
this. Which was off of what?
UKBYW.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. Oh, were you
there? UKFF.
No, no. So like that, but UKBYW forum.
Okay.
And there were other backyarders, obviously, all around England, and we would make music videos and put them on the forum, and people would like critique us. Yeah. But like people with no wrestling experience whatsoever. Someone would like always be like, sloppy lock up, sloppy wrist lock, good drop kick. Like,
now, how many of those people are in wrestling or did had?
Was there a handful? Mark Andrews was on the UK BYW. Flash Morgan Webster was on it. Wild Boar was on it. Like a lot of Puck was on it, I think.
Yeah.
Puck. Martin Stone. he was on it. God damn. Paul Robinson.
Because I always think that like these people, you have to come from somewhere.
Yeah, you do. We were just kids that just generally liked wrestling, but we just didn't take it seriously enough. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a story I think that went around, like when Pac left Dragon Gate and was going to go to WWE, he went up to Quilden and was like,
Andy Quilden, who runs Rev Pro,
and was like, where am I going to get guys who can do your flips? And he introduced them to my back, like to his backyard friends who could do it all, and they was like, and he said, if you come train with me, I'm going to train you, put you on my shows. And they went, nah. And they could do like the most ridiculous stuff, like running 630s and stuff like that. Like generally, backyarding was the coolest thing.
So there's a whole crew out there who can do all the stuff, who don't want to be on shows or
don't want to make money from it. Just wanted to do it for fun because they didn't think it was real, like in a weird way. I don't know.
How do we goat them into the world?
Well,
they got to train with Shima. Shima's got to go get them. And
maybe, but like, I mean, I convinced one of them to come back. I had Chris Sabin go up to one of my mates because the Backyarders came to one of my shows and I was actually facing Pete Dunne. Chris Sabin was on it. And I was just talking to Chris and I was saying, Ash, man, give it a go. Like, it's actually done. So you should just come back into it. You got natural athleticism. You'll do fine here. He was like, if you can convince someone of like a bigger name to do it, then yeah, I'll do it. And I went, Saban, tell my mate Ash to get back into wrestling. And Saban looked in dead eyes and went, come back to wrestling. And he went, all right, that's enough. So,
and he's in?
Yeah, he got back into the indie scene. I don't know what he's doing now. Actually, no, he's having a kid now.
Well,
so I don't know if he's still wrestling, but I think he might be.
Were there 50-year-old backyarders?
50-year-old backyarders. Yeah. There was.
Who's the oldest backyarder?
Who was the oldest backyard? Maybe just someone of like 30 or something like that. I don't know. I didn't really know people's age. Like, I was a 14, 16-year-old kid hanging around with these like guys. And it kind of makes me laugh now I think about it. Because like, obviously my friend introduced me to backyard wrestling. And like, there was a forum and stuff like that. I said to my mum once, I was like, just got a ring in the background. I was like, mum, can I have some friends around to play wrestling? And she was like, yeah, sure, go on. And like these like 25-year-old men were coming around like a 14-year-old's kid's house. Yeah. And my mum was like, who are you and why are you hanging around with my son? I was like, oh, we're just doing some wrestling. They had video cameras and stuff like that. So my mum was like freaked out. But
out of context.
The reason why we called the Neighbors from Hell is because obviously We had the police called on us like so many times because they thought we was running an underground boxing club. And the moment when my mum went, it's wrestling, they went, oh, never mind.
There you go.
So they thought it was less dangerous.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's, yeah.
So how did you get convinced to get into real wrestling? And by real wrestling, I mean fake wrestling.
the one where we make money.
Yeah, sort of.
After like a little while back yelling, I saw something. It just horrified me. And I was like, why are we doing this? Like, this is so stupid.
In the backyard?
Yeah. So someone did a top rope superplex. And in a proper ring, 18-foot ring, was actually really good. From like Monster Rings and Cages. Got it shipped over to the England. So this guy was just rich.
Cost a pretty penny.
Yeah, probably a lot. And the guy did top rope suplex from the tippy top to the floor onto the field.
Mm.
Like, and the guy that took it was fine. The guy giving it folded up like a motherfucker. And I was just put off by it because I was like, he could have died. So I said, I'm not going to do it. But because I put so many music videos out, it caught Greg Burridge's attention. Now, I know Greg from like when I used to do chain wrestling and drop kicks, like, but Greg has always kind of kept an eye on me. And he was just like, hey, what are you doing now? I was like, to be honest, I'm just kind of giving up on wrestling. I'm 17 now. I should really consider like just actually getting a job. And he was just like, no, you're not. I've started a school in Bethnal Green. Come down. You'll love it.
What was your dream going to be had he not called you?
I still wanted to be a wrestler, but I just thought it was just like, I need to wait till I'm 18 and move to America. Or something like that. I don't know the logistics of moving to America.
But what was the plan?
I don't know. Like, I just thought I was just going to
go where?
Work. I don't know.
AJ's house?
I don't know. Maybe if he'd have me. I don't know.
But you hadn't researched at all?
I just don't know. I'm not that type of kid that researches stuff. I just go with the flow.
Okay. So it was always wrestling then?
Yeah, it was always wrestling. But like, I would still backyard with my friends, like in my territory. But yeah, I'd back out with my friends, and then Greg introduced me, showed me like, oh, this is like what we do.
Did you train at Lucha Britannica?
Yes, London School of Lucha Libre. It's still going to this day now, and they still do the Lucha Britannia shows.
Mm-hmm. I said Britannica.
Yes, it's Britannia.
Britannia is the encyclopedia.
Yes, it is. Yeah, Greg showed me like I was under a mask. I was working with my friend Paul Robertson, who was a backyarder as well. So we worked well for one another, and they put me as his evil twin brother, Dark Britannico. And we would just wrestle each other all the time, and people wanted to know who the guy was under the mask, and British wrestling was growing and growing. My first show was in front of 1,000 people.
Get fucked.
Yeah.
Paid
gig. Elephant and Castle Brit Rest Fest. It was 2012. Had Doug Williams on it. Because that's the thing, like, I did live shows. Like, I made my own shows, like, when we had the youth group. And the maximum people we ever got in a venue was, like, 80 people. So I was like, this is wrestling, guys. Like, this is the level. And then, like, Greg was like, oh, yeah, come to the show. And when I walked into the venue, I was like, oh, God, this is a big venue for 80 people. Like, do you know what I mean? And then they did, like, the group meeting, and Alex Shane was there and all those guys. And he went, okay, guys, thanks for doing this. This is, once again, it's a charity event. All the tickets are going to like a charity and blah, 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 blah. So we're expected to get 1,000 people in today. I went, I beg your fucking pardon. Like, and oh my God.
Who'd you wrestle?
Me, Greg Burridge, Paul Robinson, and Santeria. We did like a Lucha Britannia showcase.
Gotcha.
And I think because there was a lot of people there, like FPW was there and Progress was there. And just quite a few guys were there at the time. And they just see some like skinny 18-year-old kid do a 6:30.
So you broke out all the stuff.
Yeah, everything. We stole the show that night. I don't care. We stole the show. Everyone was just doing the stuff. It was just like every now and again, like the biggest move is a Death Valley driver.
Mm.
Me and Paul Robinson were doing deja vus, getting Greg Burrish to give me like power bombs and shit like that. But then they just saw a kid do a 6:30 and they was like, we need him now. So then this was like the current, everyone was like making promotions in British wrestling. And I think everyone was like, all right, who's the guy under the mask? And I didn't really have an identity. At the time, my backyard name was Ace Payne. I was like, I can't have that as a name.
It's a great name.
No, it can't. So then I went, all right, well, what's your real name? And I went, Billy. And it was like, we can't call you Billy. Why can't we call you Billy? It was like, what's your real name? I was like, William. And then they was like, sounds posh, not really posh. Will. And then, okay, what's your surname? I was like, Osprey. And I went, oh my God, that's a bird. So I was like, yeah. So Will Ospreay was born, but I just remember Greg telling me you just need something more to connect with crowds and stuff like that. You need to think of like what's cool outside of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, the coolest thing at the time was Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
So then I thought, oh, if I wear the Assassin's Creed jacket, maybe I'm cool.
And that's what got you. See, we met at
FPW.
Was it FPW?
Yes. That's the, well,
I want to say Rev Pro for in Bournemouth or whatever that's called.
Swan.
I don't. What Swan? Is FPW?
You did one show there because I remember. I think you hated me because I said to you like because everyone was doing the river like, wherever your favorite film is, Will hasn't seen it. So then I would go across the room and just be like, "Hey man, what's your favorite film?" And they would go like, I don't even know what it's called anymore, but whatever." That's, and then I went to you and I went, "What's your favorite film?" And you would say it, and I went, haven't seen it. And you went, you prick, like in front of the entire locker room. I was like, oh no, I've upset Colt Cabana. But no, you are right, actually. The first time I met you was like in RevPro because then you started the feud with Shah Samuels.
I was going to say, and I just remember you hopping around the ring beforehand.
Yeah.
And I remember being with Andy Quilden, and I'm like, who is this guy? And he's just like, oh, he's a man of many flips. Like, he was like, even then, and he was just like kind of explaining you to me being like, he's very young, he's gonna be really good.
He said that.
Yeah. But he's into many of flips, and you were doing just like
everything
stunt work. But this was before the show. You were just like doing stunt work, like you were literally in the ring. Does that make sense?
I just don't remember us.
Right. I do. For some reason I remember you in the ring, but I don't remember what FPW was. I don't remember that promotion. It's okay. You have nothing to feel bad about.
Yeah, just I thought that was just funny just because like, I was doing that whole thing. What's your favorite film? Haven't seen it. And then I pointed to you and I was like, I kind of went, oh, God, no. Like, I don't want to come across as a dick.
Wait, but the joke was, I think it's in Surrey. And I said that you said sorry.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my bad.
And I said, it's okay.
It's the accent again. I'm sorry.
But wait, yeah, I remember wrestling in Surrey. I just don't remember what FPW was.
Future Pro Wrestling.
I know. Why can't I remember that?
There was three dudes that ran it. One was a bald dude. One was a bigger lad, and one looked like he worked in an office.
Yep, no, I knew it.
No. One of those dudes, like one of them. But you are right though. RevPro was the first time I met you, and you was knee deep in the feud with Shah Samuels at that point. And I actually watched that match, and that was one of my favorite matches because just watching you and Shah, because I was like, well, the American wouldn't win a British title, like, of course not. And when you won it, I was like, God, I'm such a fan. Like,
well, so how did you think you developed into, or tell me your stages of like, right? We all have these points in our career where we feel like stuff has moved, if that makes sense. Like
the British wrestling boom.
No, in your own career, you've made some kind of switch and you've gone to another level, and then you've gone to another level, and that's what your career will be, is all these levels. So the first one, you're just starting out, you're on these shows,
I think my thing is more like learning experiences. Like, so I would always wrestle British guys no matter what. I never got in the ring with an American. The first American I got in the ring with, and I think this was at the time when he was at his hottest, like he was winning belts left, right and center, was Ricochet. It was the first like foreigner I ever got in the ring with.
And where was that at?
RevPro.
And so before that match, were you wrestling all the shows or
all the RevPro shows? Yeah,
I mean all the shows in England.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, I mean not all of them, but like the London based ones. Yes.
Okay.
I just didn't like traveling. I don't like traveling ever.
Okay.
But I was just doing like all the London ones, like Progress. I was doing FPW, RevPro, Lucha Britannia, my own little promotion that I was like helping run and stuff like that. But yeah, he was the first guy, and in my mind I said to myself, like, okay, this is now, like, this is where I'm gonna learn. Because like, I got in the ring with guys like Haskins and I would learn from that. Then I'd get in the ring with Project Ego, which was Martin Kirby and Chris Travis, God rest his soul, and I would learn from the top British guys. But like, I think for me to take it to the next level, for like, I wanted to learn the PWG style, and like, do you know what I mean? But that was cool at the time. Yeah. The PWG,
it's so crazy that that's a that. Like, I know it is.
Yeah, you
but
know.
Just
what
to
I
hear
mean.
Someone say that. I mean, we're wrestling in the same era.
Yeah.
But we're in different eras of wrestling.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, just like, you know, I've got whatever. What are you, 27?
26.
Right. So I'm almost, you know, 14 years, like I've gone through different independent eras. And by the time I kind of got deep into what I was in, you start hearing that those like street names, you know, like PWG stuff.
Like the TNA kick.
Right,
like,
right, right. You know, I was in it when I heard that, but you know, I'm so fixated in what I'm doing, I guess now is
I think it's like where the hotbeds of pro wrestling were, right? So in my opinion, at that time of my career, it was 2013 maybe, and I think PWG was the hottest thing. And I was just like, okay, like this is the style that I want to learn. So like, and Ricochet was lovely because he's just the nicest dude ever. And he was just, I said, look, today I know nothing, but I can do whatever you want me to do. I was like, I want to learn. He said, what can you do? And I went, the coolest thing I can do is a 630. That is the coolest thing. He was like, oh, so can I. So like, it was like, I'll get your 630 in, but I'm finishing you with my 630. And it was so cool.
And what did you do? Did you go through a list of the moves and things?
No, was just like, well, this is what I do. And then he would go like, what would you like to do here? And I would say something, but it was like, okay, do you know what will make it better? This. And I'd go, yep, I'm going to do it. Like I did a satellite DDT and like, I don't think I've ever done a satellite DDT in my life at that point, but I was just like, yeah, I can do it because you've told me to do it. Because it wasn't part of the move set, the arsenal.
And then you watched how he placed, what he placed, where he placed,
and
right?
Then because he wasn't obviously a regular in England and like there was no such thing as an on-demand service at this point. It was just DVDs. I would do all of Ricochet's moves. Yeah. I would literally take that structure. I would do his moves. I would like do his combos. And
then he would
tweet me saying, stop doing my moves. And then I had Jimmy Havoc one day pull me to one side and go like, look, it's amazing that you can do this stuff, but now it's good to know that you're Ricochet, but now we need to find Will.
Yeah.
And that's when I went, okay. So instead, I just took aspects of like every like match era or every era of wrestling that I ever loved and kind of put it.
How does your brain make up moves? Does it?
I don't know. My brain does. I don't know. Like, so here's something funny. Yeah. Like, just for a little funny side note. And everyone I've told this so far has gone, yeah, we know. I didn't know. So I did a test last week. I have ADHD. I never knew.
Come on, that's a good
one. I never knew.
What'd you do the test on? Online?
Not online. So I called a doctor first, and then he sent over this verified test thing, and then like I was on the phone to him doing the test as well, like clicking yes and no and whatever, blah, 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 blah. Turns out I have ADHD.
Yeah.
Never knew. I had to pay $30 for it as well. $30 to be told that everyone already knew.
Did he medicate you?
He said, if you want medication, we can get it. I was like, oh, I kind of like who I am though.
There you go.
Like, I mean, yeah, I don't think I should be on any more medication anyway. Just
if you're in seventh grade, it might be all right.
Yeah, but like, yeah, my brain just—I don't know. Like now, my brain works a little bit. I mean, not the best, but like still better than what it was. Just understanding how to place. But I think that is just what do you mean by coming up moves or coming up with match structure?
No, not necessarily match structure, but it's just you know. I think if I was to say PWG style. It's kind of a little bit about innovation, right?
Yes.
And it's about, it's funny to bring up dance, but you know, like these matches have kind of become a bit of a dance where you just, these sequences are what makes the people kind of go crazy.
Yes.
So I guess it's not so much the actual move, but the sequences that brings the move to life.
Yeah, I think my thing is now is just, as long as the sequence like looks like I'm going for at least something, then that's where I think like I kind of like connect in a weird way. Just, I don't know.
Do you, when you're going into a match, do you see it happening? Or like if you have a match coming up, are you visioning it?
Yeah. Like for example,
are you just watching some shit and hoping something inspires you?
A little bit of both. Like so I get inspired on just like weird things now, but I don't know. I think back then, like I try and remember like, moment when I was a kid, but I think I generally was just along the lines of just I want to wrestle and I just want to get this move in. I didn't really care about selling or I didn't care about like movement. I was like, as long as I look at a camera after I do a move, then that's cool, right? That's facials, isn't it? Like, I don't know, but like, I think it was like wrestling Ricochet. Then I got to wrestle like more for him. I had Matt Sydal's first match back in England. I wrestled AJ Styles as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. I wrestled Kenny Omega. I wrestled Imbola. I had like a real cool story with Jimmy in Progress, which I think kind of was like the real learning of like a story. So like I had these like ups and downs and dips and dives.
Do you remember the time where, because obviously you're wrestling Ricochet and you're like, oh my God, Ricochet, like teach me. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm sure Matt Sydal.
Yeah, teach me, yeah.
Right, but is there a moment where you felt as an equal in the ring with these guys, if that makes sense?
Like, no, dude, even to this day, like I still don't think I belong here. I feel like I'm going to set up a ring in my garden soon, just do a backyard show. I still have to pinch myself.
So you still don't see it as like two equal partners going at it?
No, I still think I'm learning like all the time. Like even now, like if I ever say like, oh, you got Okada next week. Like I still am just like, Okada, teach me. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so the first time you wrestled and you
I mean like, actually, sorry to cut you off. Yeah. My apologies. But like when I'm like in the ring, like now, if I'm doing like an independent with a guy who's like once in my position,
correct,
I want to try and get the best out of him. So now, of course. I feel like it's my responsibility to try and teach that style to him, just because I do feel like now I do. This is going to sound stupid, but I do think that match with Ricochet from the Best of Super Juniors did inspire a lot of people in that style. But like, I think they kind of was like, are we going to do this in time to by 10? But like, it was, oh, well, that doesn't look good. That doesn't look good. Please stop it. Please stop. But then like, and I've got like a kid in England that I'm teaching, like when I'm over there anyway, and he sends me his matches. Like, and I do sometimes, I'm like, oh, stop running. Just stop. Just sell. And just like, you know, just little things like that. So like,
but it takes experiences for those.
Yeah,
guys.
But like for me, it's like I would like to teach him that side of things, because like that's obviously when I faced Okada the first time, like I saw an opportunity to learn from him, and he was just like, okay, hit, sell, stay, and like I would suggest all these moves, and he'd go like, no, just one. So then I have to be like, this one. Like, do you know what I mean? Just, and he'd tell me why it would make sense and et cetera, et cetera. So,
and he saw something in you. Or you became friends, or you had a good match, or what?
We had a good match, but like I think it was half the reason was like, Taiga Itori was in the crowd watching. I had Gato ringside. I had just all the boys, like Tanahashi was watching behind the curtain, and then like as soon as the match finished, apparently Tanahashi went straight to Itori and was like, "You need to get him. He's like a white coat or a bushi."
Nice.
So I thought that was very lovely of him. And then that happened because my dad that year had a heart attack, and I was contemplating just like stopping wrestling, just because I was like, I need to be able to provide for my family, because I can't be an electrician now, because my dad was the sole reason I could go to work. So then I got like a job plus doing the indies, but it was like getting to the point where like my wrestling, even though I was wrestling a lot, I wasn't really earning money. It was merchandise I wasn't really a thing on.
And you're pretty famous for being shit with money also.
Yes, very famous for being shit with money.
If I could instill anything in you, yes. I will. I'll try. But
I know, to be fair, I'm better now.
Okay.
So my dad had like a heart attack. And I was like, okay, if I don't hear anything from this year, because my friends were being signed. So I was like, it wasn't impossible, but I just think they're not going to look at a skinny white kid. Like they're not going to look at me. I'm not tanned. I'm not buff. I don't have a six pack. In fact, they were like skinny boy abs. So I was just like, I don't know. I think I'll knock it on the head and maybe I'll go to college or see if I can like redo my exams or something like that. But I think Okada put me over. They said they'll bring me over to Super Juniors. So I was like, cool. And then the month after, WWE offered me the Cruiserweight Classic. So I was like, oh, cool. And they said, oh, you can do both if you want. You can do the Super Juniors and that. So I was like, oh, amazing. And then Impact offered me a deal. And then it was AJ, Nakamura, and all that left. And New Japan needed to sign guys. And Okada literally just went, just sign Will.
Yeah.
And then I think WWE heard about that. And then they offered me a full-time deal. So then that was the point where I was like, oh, who do I go to? Like, I don't know. But then all the guys that I saw were like the cool guys in NXT came from New Japan. So then I was kind of like, oh, I think it's the right decision to go to New Japan. And the real selling point for me was, because at the time I'm 22, I'm still a little bit of a kid. And the real selling point was, you go there, you do a show, you come home. You go there, you do a tour, you come home. So then I think that I'm a home guy.
And WWE was moved to Florida. Yeah,
moved to Florida. Yeah. Train with us every day. Practice your entrance.
Yeah.
Practice your promo.
Did you have someone that you – that's a big decision, especially at 22. Did you confide in anybody?
My friend Paul, I confided in. My friend Sam, I confided in. And my missus as well. Like, me and my missus just started seeing each other at that point as well.
And did everyone – was everyone kind of like that – your choice is the right choice, or were people?
I think my mum was along the lines of like, I don't know what a New Japan is. I know what WWE is. Go there.
Right.
But like, obviously being the nerd that I am, I was like, yeah, no, but guys go there and they don't get on TV or they don't make it. It's like, I'm a no one still. I'm just some British kid. I need to go and do something else. And then Hattori kind of sold it to me by saying like, oh yeah, we want you to do be it like Devitt. Yeah. Oh man, you gotta be like David, you know. He's good. He's English too. Oh no, he's Irish. Oh, just say, man.
Just sign, bro.
But like, yeah, I think the thing was, it's definitely because like my dad was starting to get better as well. So I was like, okay. And I didn't know New Japan wanted to sign me. I just knew they wanted me for two shows. So then I was like, okay, I'm gonna go to Japan. I think I made a decision. I told Regal, I told all those guys, I don't think it's right for me yet. I don't want to move away from home. I'm going to go do New Japan. And they kind of went, okay, cool. And just hung up the phone. I don't think they were very happy about it. I've still got the voicemail on my phone. It's quite funny.
Yeah, sure. I've got a couple emails that I have of rejection. They're still like saved in my inbox, but I'm like, I don't want to do
it. I got the voicemail just because I was like, I think it's real, like just cool. Just every now and again, I'm like, cool, WWE called me. That's cool, isn't it? But just like going there, and I didn't know I was signing. Like, I didn't know anything. They brought me to their office and they was like, okay, here's the deal. We want to sign you full time. And I didn't know what that meant. Like, I've never seen a contract before in my entire life. Like, so it was there and I like had to read it myself. And like, I'm dyslexic as well. So like every single word was being jumbled up. But I was kind of like, it takes a lot for me to trust somebody as well. But I trust these guys. I don't think they would ever do me wrong. So I read it best as I could. And I signed on that day.
And you know the Japanese culture. Like they're. Do you not know?
No,
I mean, I'm saying now.
Now I do, but they're the sweetest.
They're just kind. I don't think there's any dickheads here. Well, maybe.
I had one dickhead in my entire life here.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I love this place. I don't think I could be anywhere else. Cause like, I think that's the thing. Like when I first came here, like in my head, I was like, I think this is the platform I need to get to WWE. Cause in my head, I'm like, WWE is the place to go. WWE is all I need to be, like to be a star and to have that fulfillment. I need to be in WWE. And then I had my first match here and I went, I never want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And like subconsciously, I think it was when I watched Marufuji and Okada, and Marufuji was like a huge deal for me. Like seeing him live, I was like, God, that's Marufuji.
And you can look at Okada now and you can, you know, I do. And I'm like, fuck, that's a star, right?
That's the biggest guy, probably in the, like the biggest star in maybe, not a world of wrestling.
I mean,
maybe
he looks like, I know like you look at WWE and you're like, oh my God, Triple H, The Rock or whatever. That's a star. But like the way same he
carries
way.
Himself, like,
what's that?
The way Okada carries
or
himself.
Presented or promoted, you know, don't forget that we're all just people, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing as like you look at Okada and you look at the way that he's presented and promoted, and I'm just like, God damn,
there's money falling from the ceiling. Right? And it's like, this is what I want. Yeah. I want money falling.
And you're
from
working your way there too, right? Like,
I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to be here.
So, it's pretty cool. Oh, meme life was cool.
Meme.
All stemming from Ricochet. So you became a thing.
Yeah.
That whatever. I don't know. You were a little like, it became, what's the word, polarized a little bit?
I think everyone just called me the White Ricochet, like a little bit.
Yeah, but a lot of, like, all of a sudden there was a lot of people for you and or against you, like, hard, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, a lot of people were like, this is wrestling or this isn't wrestling, right?
You kind of stemmed almost, I don't want to say a movement, like an argument in wrestling or like a conversation that should be coming up, right? Yeah.
And to be fair, like, a lot of really good points were made when that match happened in Super Juniors. A lot of points I did look at and go, oh no, to be fair, they're right. And but then I was like, no, why is this wrong and why is this right? And I kind of like to hear everyone's side of it. But like, me and Trev did that match and we just didn't think everything off. It was just, it's just one of our matches that we do.
Yeah.
But like, because it was on such a bigger scale, And I think because New Japan promoted it so much, it's just like, yeah, you're going to want to watch this match. Main event of Kurikin. And it was one of the weirdest things ever. Like, this is awesome chance. Holy shit chance. One more match chance in Kurikin. To the point where I was like, I almost didn't like it. I was like, this is not the chance you normally hear here.
Right. You're used to the subtle clapping of the Japanese.
But it was like the idea, though, that like what we did wasn't pro wrestling. And I kind of was like, I would beg to differ. I'd like to point out that everything we did, at least we went for something, or like went for like a trademark of what we do. And what, like, this is what Ricochet and Will Ospreay would do, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we're a damn Marvel movie.
And you've, like, how do you see, I don't know if this is better, like how do you see your wrestling now? Like, do you-
I think it's a lot different. Like, I think I have gone through a lot. What, back then?
No. Like, as just closing this up, I guess, it's just like, I'd love to, like, your envision of wrestling, like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I'm always open to interpretation of what, like, wrestling is, but I think the main thing is after getting a ring with guys like Shibata and Tanahashi, and Hiromu, and so many, like, this year's has been hectic for me. Like, I've had to go through, like, learning a junior heavyweight style to then being thrown in the deep end with the heavyweights, and just, like, having to sink or swim because, like, all the guys left. And the right thing that New Japan has always done is when guys have left, there's always guys ready to step up. And they book that so well that I generally have, like, a wider concept. Like, I can do a Lucha Libre match if you want me to. I can do like a British chain wrestling match, but my style is kind of like, I like to do a little bit of a hybrid style. I like to try and show people now that I have put a little bit more mass on my body as well. So I'm trying to strength show, like, I can't do many of the twists I used to do as well. Like, so.
And then I'll say this. We think of how, I want to know if you think about this, because I do all the time, of we look at, like, I don't know, even Red, right? Like, you look at, like, wrestling from, like, the 80s to the 90s and how fast it went. And then, like, 90, and then you, like, 90s to early 2000, like, Red. And, like, Red was, like, blowing people's mind. And then, like, now, like, you know, you guys are doing the crazy shit you're doing. Like, how fast it's gone and how fast the movements and the spots are, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, we think, like, okay, it can't get topped in that. So, in 20 years, have you thought about in 20 years, like, what wrestling's going to be? 25 years?
Until, like, so the one thing I'm waiting to see, and I don't know if, I don't think it's possible, but I want to see someone do, like, a double rotation shooting star press off the top rope.
Yeah, that's the next.
But
the
I think that thing is the next step. I think, like, do you think I could do it? No, I don't think I can. Like, I barely can make, like, shooting
star presses.
But
someone will figure it out.
But someone will.
And because no one, a 450, Scorpio doing a 450 was the craziest thing ever.
In the 80s, yeah. And like,
right.
Do you remember when Liger, which by the way is still mental, that Liger is the person that invented the shooting star press. And now he's just like one of your coworkers, like, which is mental. Dude,
Tenzan told me today he likes my character. And my heart melted. I was like, fuck.
But that's cool.
Fucking like, hell, it's cool.
Like Nagata and like guys like Tano would like carry this company to newer heights and like should have the biggest ego of all time, but it's the most humble dude ever.
Yeah.
Guys like Okada are like, people look at him and go, that is the coolest motherfucker of all time. We see a different Okada backstage. We see this goofball and just like.
But I'm saying the 450, and then someone started doing a 630. You know what I'm saying? Like
someone put another twist on
it. Crazy. It's just fucking crazy. And the idea
someone did a moonsault. Amazing Red did a 540 moonsault. Right.
And so there's going to be next steps.
There's going to be steps, but like.
And faster action, right?
I think there's going to be robots as well. Like,
DDT will come up with.
Oh, yeah. It's like a wrestling robot. Like, I definitely think so. And it's going to be so much better than promos at us. And we're all going to suck. And then we're all going to get out of work. And then there's going to be this like race war between robots and humans in wrestling.
They're taking our jobs.
Yep. Taking our jobs. South Park fan. I like it.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, bud.
Yeah.
That's it.
Is that it?
Are we missing anything?
No.
Great.
No, that's all good. But thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, dude.
I generally love having a little chat with you.
It was a nice little chat.
It was a lovely chat.
And there you have it, at Will Ospreay on Twitter and Instagram, or you could buy his merch, willosprey.bigcartel.com. I saw some posters that were up for sale from the Tokyo Dome, or, of course, my preferred link, ProWrestlingTees.com/WillOsprey. And that was before the Tokyo Dome. Him and Hiromu tore it up at the Tokyo Dome. I'm sure he's going to continue to tear it up more and more. Will Ospreay on the show. That is the show for this week. Before we get out of here, I do have some plugs and upcoming events. All right, the best way that you can support, patreon.com/ColtCabana. That is where you can listen to all of these shows ad-free. I always put up new fun stuff. I have so much weird stuff that I'll just put on the Patreon, but mainly it's the home of the archives of the Art of Wrestling. Also, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at ColtCabana, Facebook/ColtCabana, ColtWrestling@gmail.com is my very public email. Maybe you're a promoter, want to put me on your upcoming show or convention. I got a YouTube channel. I also have a website, ColtCabana.com. That's where you can find my P.O. box, and if you send me some stuff in the P.O. box, I'll probably talk about it on these next five shows coming up. Upcoming, January 24th, 26th, 27th, 30th, and February 1st, Tampa, Nashville, Raleigh, Miami, and Atlanta, njpw1972.com. Friday, February 7th, Denver, Colorado, Facebook/Primo's Wrestling. Saturday, February 8th, Rahway, New Jersey, ProWrestlingOnline.com, WrestlePROOnline.com. Thursday, February 27th, Winnipeg, Canada, WrestleMax 2. And let's talk WrestleMania weekend in Tampa. Friday and Saturday in the morning and afternoon, I'll be at WrestleCon.com. I'll also be doing their variety show Thursday night, Joey Ryan's Penis Party Saturday night, and their breakfast and softball game on Sunday. I'm doing a live Art of Wrestling at the Collective Friday at 4, and I'll also be doing Brian Zane's Movie Watch Along Saturday at 3. Intro music was by the Ukulele Teacher on YouTube. Outro music by Super Fun Yeah Yeah Rocket Ship. Podcast cover art designed by Jimmy Lee. Photo by James Musselwhite. Thanks to our sponsors, HighSpots.com and the High Spots Network, the VOD service with brand new $5 wrestling starring myself and Marty DeRosa. Of course, all those PWGs, Best Friends, Egos Amigos. You can also get AMA knee pads, gear, a wrestling mask, even a wrestling ring. And 1HourTees.com, they help run ProWrestlingTees.com. I got a store, ProWrestlingTees.com/ColtCabana. All right, that is episode number one in the books. I hope you dig it. Please tell people. If people listen, there will be a second batch coming out after this batch. But this is just the start. All I ask is you keep subscribed. You tell people to stay subscribed. And I know I said I'd be doing two a month, so I guess I'll let you in on a little secret. Shouldn't be a secret. We'll have another episode next week. So I'll see you next week. Until then, this has been The Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.
I read the Meltzer stuff, not them.
That's funny.
Thanks. I thought of it with my brain.
You can keep it on there, yeah.